very unnecessary. Is that swingy symphony they call the dick? A dickity, a dinkadoo, a dinkity. Oh, what a tune for crooning. Ink, a dinkity, a dinkadoo, a dinkity. It's got the whole world swooning.
From a meager Frankfurter stand in Coney Island, New York in 1916 to America's most loved and iconic household brand, Nathan's Famous is an icon we all know. My next guest is the grandson of the founder of Nathan's Famous, and he has written the book Nathan's Famous, The First 100 Years, and it chronicles the milestones and centennial history and business strategies of the company's founder, Nathan Handwerker. My guest, Bill Handwerker. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you for having me.
So, Bill, how did it all start? Way back when in 1916 in Coney Island, give us kind of a picture of the way things were back then.
Well, Grandfather Nathan came to this country in 1912, not knowing how to speak, read, or write. And he was able to overcome that and got into the food service business via a luncheonette, Max's Busy Bee. And in 1914, he went to Coney Island during the summer to try and make some more money. And eventually in 1916, opened up his own restaurant.
The restaurant served what in particular?
He served Frankfurters, French fries, and malted milkshakes.
Mm-hmm. So that was a pretty popular fare back then?
Yes, well, throughout Coney Island, they were selling Frankfurters for 10 cents, and he felt that in order to grow his business, he had to try something different, and he opened it up for 5 cents, and the rest is history.
Now, I would think he was pretty smart about business, so he tried this 5 cents, but wasn't he worried that people would think that the quality was inferior? Because there's a story in the book about how he got some white coats from the local hospital. Tell us about that.
Yes. So, well, the competitors were not too happy with my grandfather, and they spread rumors that he was using inferior meats, and that's the only way he could afford to sell it for 5 cents. So he went to Coney Island Hospital, and he borrowed doctor's coats and stethoscopes and gave them to people in front of the restaurant and gave them free franks. And when people passed by and saw that doctors were eating the franks, they said, well, if it's good enough for doctors, it's good enough for me.
Oh, those were simple times, weren't they?
Yeah, you would think so.
Now, see, what particularly interests me, and I know there's a lot to this story, we have a limited time. What particularly interests me that I think is important for those of us in business today is that, you know, here he entered a business where there was a lot of competition and he was trying to figure out a way to differentiate himself. So one way he did was through price, for sure, but there had to be more than that. What else was different about Nathan's hot dogs at the time?
Well, I think it was not just the hot dogs, but that he was, you know, he concentrated on the service of it. And I believe that quality of combining quick service and quality food was the difference. And I tell people that I think that my grandfather's stand was really the first true fast food restaurant.
Mm-hmm. So he understood how to make a consistent product in a clean atmosphere and get it to the customer fast. Was there a point in time when, let's say, a movie star or someone famous picked up on it that launched the brand even further?
Well, there was several people throughout the company's history. Right from the get-go, when he was working at Felton's Beer Gardens, Eddie Cantor and Jimmy Durante were singing waiters, and as the story goes, tried to convince him, and they were going to lend him the money to open up his own restaurant and sell it for a nickel. But he did it on his own, and throughout history, from politicos of Nelson Rockefeller, who said, you can't hope to be elected in New York State without eating a Frankfurter in front of Nathan's, to Bobby Kennedy's first run, Barbara Streisand sent them over to London. And the kicker is, Walter Matthau had them served at his funeral.
Talk about iconic brands and the meaning behind just, you know, your plain old-fashioned, good quality hot dog. So there was more to it, though. When did the hot dog eating contest actually start?
It was in the early 1970s, and yes, in terms of PR, you know, Nathan's reputation was much larger than the actual business, and our monies had to be spent as most efficiently as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we had these two gentlemen of PR people, Morty Matz and Max Rosie, who thought up the idea by, they had a client, Hess's department store, and they ran a donating contest, and it was successful.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought that if that was successful, how can you imagine how successful a hot dog eating contest would be? And that's how it began.
The book is Nathan's Famous, The First 100 Years, An Unauthorized View of America's Favorite Frankfurter Company. Now, Bill, you worked in the business for quite a while. Tell us about a little bit about your father and your experience working there.
My father, when he came back from World War II, was truly the impetus for the expansion of the company. You know, the generation of my grandparents and that generation of immigrants felt that it was most important to take care of the immediate family and the extended family, and that Coney Island was sufficient. When my father came back from the war, he said, "Pop, we have to grow," and that all the GIs coming back are moving out of Brooklyn, a lot were moving out of Brooklyn to Long Island and Westchester and so forth. And it was his impetus to expand the restaurants itself. And going further than that, when I came on board full time, we had just began a major effort in the supermarket program of packaged Frankfurters. And basically, you know, that's how the company grew to where it is today, going through many different gyrations, obviously the ups and the downs. But the bottom line is that the quality of the product is what kept this company going and expanding to where it is today.
You know, you'll find this interesting, but a few weeks ago, I interviewed Patricia Gucci from the Gucci family, and your family story is very, very similar. There was Guccio Gucci who started the business, very local in Florence. The son, Aldo Gucci, came in after the war, saw the GIs, expanded. It's a very similar story. You may want to get that book to read a little bit about that. Talk about different businesses, but a very common story, perhaps, way back when. Now, things weren't always smooth. You write in the book about something called the Wetson effect. I'd like to know what lessons were learned from that experience.
Well, at that time, my father had growth plans in his mind, and the Wetsons was in the New York market and Connecticut, New Jersey, North Jersey, as really the primary hamburger fast food outlet. And they had troubled times, and we purchased the company, but it was too many locations. And as everyone knows, location, location, location. And the bottom line is that was a lesson learned. And fortunately, through a lot of hard work and effort, we were able to work through that overexpansion back to consolidation and the brand move forward. But the lesson learned there is that infamous or a famous expression, location, location, location. And the Wetson stores that were not successful as Wetson's were not successful as Nathan's. And that was a lesson well learned.
From reading the book, too, it was, I think, also a question of cash flow in order to sustain and to actually create the synergies between the Wetson and the Nathan's brand. My guest is Bill Handwerker. He's the grandson of famous Nathan, and the book he wrote about that is called Nathan's Famous, The First 100 Years, An Unauthorized View of America's Favorite Frankfurter Company. Bill Handwerker, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. And if anyone is interested in getting a hold of me, you can get me on Facebook, Nathan's Famous, The First 100 Years.
Very good. Thank you.
The world will always welcome lovers as time goes. Bye.